Hallo, dear Michael, hallo Swantje. Michael, thank you that you give us a chance to interview you in English. My first question, dear Michael. Michael is a quite normal name, but what means dear Michael, and who gave you this name?
Well, Soham gave me this name, my spiritual master Soham. And Dian means, well, actually, there are two translations. It's an Indian word, a Sanskrit word, and Dian means meditation. It basically means turning inwards. And when I came to Soham 23 years ago, I had my name Michael. And at some point I asked him, at that time he gave spiritual names to everybody who asked for it. And after a while I also wanted to have a spiritual name. And so I asked him and he came back to me after a while and he said, well, your name Michael fits you so well, but I give you the Dian on top of it, And since then, I'm called Dian Michael. And it's interesting, at that time, I didn't think much about it. But now meditation has become the most important part in my life. And that's what Dian means, meditation. So it took like 17, 18 years until meditation really entered my life, and until I realized that this is really the perfect name for me.
You just called Soham, or at that time he was called Samapan, a spiritual teacher for you, or what is the function of a spiritual teacher?
Yeah, I call him my spiritual master. Yeah, it's an interesting question because I never asked myself this question simply because I didn't come to Soham because I was looking for a spiritual master or a spiritual teacher. I more or less stumbled into his satsangs by accident. I wasn't looking. It wasn't that I decided at some point, okay, I need help or I need guidance. I want to have a spiritual teacher. I never had any intention like this, but by some accident, I heard about him and I got curious and I just was curious and I wanted to check it out. And then I met him for the first time. And I stayed. And only when I look back, I understand why I stayed and what his function in my life really is. And basically what a spiritual master does is, well, I don't know about other spiritual masters. I can only talk about Soham. He's the first person, maybe the only person in one's life who shows you that there's another direction, the direction inwards, towards yourself. Soham taught me to meet myself, to discover who I am, and that is something at that time when I met him, I had no idea about who I am, what I want, how I actually feel. My whole attention was directed outwards. I try to be a good person. I try to fulfill the expectations of the people I loved because I wanted to be loved. And my whole attention, my whole focus was on the world around me. And he was the first one and the only one who, I can say it like this, who introduced me to myself.
How did he does this? He just through his presence or through his energy or through that what he was talking to you?
Well, it's both of what you just said. The most important thing is invisible, but in my experience, this is the most powerful, just because he knows himself. He, with his own attention, with his own focus, he's resting inside. He doesn't have his focus on the outside. He doesn't worry about what people expect from him. His focus is inside. And it's kind of contagious. It's like you pick it up from a master, but you don't know it. It happens automatically. It's like how a child learns from the parents. Everything the child learns is not by words, not by doing. The child picks up the energy and the habits of the parents. And that's how it happened with Soham. But he also gave and gives a lot of practical hints how to support this. You know, he taught me how to experience the moment, what's really happening right now with me, how I feel right now, without thinking about it, without worrying about what I should feel like right now or how I should be right now. So again and again, he gave me practical hints. And Soham gives satsang, so he has a lot of conversations with a lot of people. I rarely had conversations with him, but I experienced how he talked to all those people. And he basically said the same things again and again and again to everybody. The things I just mentioned. And that's how I heard these things again and again and again. And I slowly picked them up. It's just a matter of time. Yeah.
To call somebody his spiritual or her spiritual teacher, is there need a deep love to this person or a deep resonance? Or how would you describe what makes this happen?
Well, it happens automatically. Yeah, it's like when you fall in love with another person. Like you don't think about, okay, do I love this person really? Do I want to be in contact with this person? You just notice how you behave very interesting and how you feel attracted, and you don't even know why. You don't worry about whether you love or not. It's just happening. Sometimes against your will. And it's the same with a spiritual master. As I said, my first contact with Soham was by accident. And I was sitting in his satsang and I want to describe how it happened that I stayed with him. Yeah. It was like this. I went to this event, which he gave that evening. It's called satsang. I had no clue what that means. I didn't know what it is about. So I went there, a room full of people, full of strange people I didn't know. So I sat down, not knowing what to expect. I didn't know Soham. And then he entered the room. He walked across the room towards his chair and he sat down. A totally ordinarily looking guy. I thought, who is this? He walked past me towards his chair and I thought, who is this strange guy? He didn't look spiritual or anything like this. He was just like a funny looking guy sitting down in that chair. And I thought, this must be Soham because he's sitting down there. But then I I suddenly felt such a wellness. I was like overwhelmed by feeling so right, so worryless. It was like all of a sudden all my worries were gone. I just felt like I felt at home suddenly, like a deep relaxation and peace spread in me. And I didn't even connect this to Soham. I was just sitting there and that happened. And this, I felt like, here I want to stay forever. Here in this space, in this wellness, I want to stay forever. I don't want to leave this anymore. That was how I felt. And that was like my guide. It just happened that from that day on, I was traveling with Soham. I started working for him. I started taking care of all the technical needs around his events. And you asked whether a deep love or resonance is needed. It's like I just described how I felt inside of myself. It was like something in me told me, oh, here I feel well. Here I feel right. Yeah. It's like when you fall in love with a woman, something inside tells you, I want to go there as close as possible. And that's how it was for me. And then in the years later, love developed. Yeah. I can say it like this, but I'm very careful with this. I'm a man. I'm kind of a sober guy. But over the years, as I became more and more open to him and more open to myself, yeah, the closer I got to myself, the more I discovered myself, the more I loved him. And now that I really live in me, I love him more than ever. Yeah, it's funny. It's as if the more I love me, the more I love my master, as if there's no difference. It's kind of funny. Yeah. And you asked me what this name Dhyan means. The Indian gurus give usually two different syllables to the spiritual name. They either call somebody Dhyan something or Prem something. And Prem means love. And Dhyan means meditation. And so meditation is something very quiet, very invisible, very inside. And that really fit my personality. I never was somebody who bursts in love and throws himself in front of the master on the floor or cries out of joy. I was always very quiet, very withdrawn. But I had very intense experiences and feelings, nevertheless, but they were invisible. And other people, the Prem people, they have these love, very strong love feelings and stuff. But this is something which is not, it's just not my personality. That's why I can't say anything about that.
Svanjali, do you have a question in this?
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Svanjali.
Good to have you here.
Yeah, I'm happy that you are here too.
I wanted to know, what does enlightenment mean to you? Do you think it's some kind of openings that happened in the mind? And if yes, could you share an experience?
An opening in the mind. This whole process, what we call spiritual, this whole when a human being comes to the point where he starts to discovering that there is something apart from this world which we know. And when this person starts turning inwards with the help of a master or a guru, then part of this whole path I won't even call it an opening, a totally reorganization of a lot of things inside. But it's a process. It's a natural growing. Just like a child grows and becomes a teenager and then puberty starts, and slowly, slowly over the years, this teenager develops into an adult. But even when you're 40, you wouldn't say I'm an adult, because you still feel really like a child or stupid. It's a process which never ends. And it is like this with the spiritual aspect of our lives as well. But there are experiences which show us that something is happening with us. For me, it's like the experience itself, that what we call enlightenment, is not necessarily an event which changes us. Yeah. But it's more like you have an experience, an inner experience, and that experience shows you, oh wow, I'm different than I was before. It's more like not the cause, but the effect of what's going on anyway. And that's why it's not important whether you have experiences like this. Yeah. There are people who report about fantastic, dramatic enlightenment experiences. And it's great. Yeah. And some of them write books about it. And then other people read these books and say, well, I don't have this experience. And then they wait for this experience and it never happens. But this experience is not important. It's like you, when you're on a journey, yeah? And on this journey, you come across certain wayposts, yeah? You see certain things on the way, and some of the things you see, maybe you come around the corner, and suddenly you see a beautiful scenery, or suddenly you see the sun, yeah, which you didn't see before. It's just like this. You are on this development, this natural human development path. And then you come at a point where you begin to feel something inside which you haven't felt before. And it's a really wonderful encouragement and experience. But it's not important. I want to stress this because I hear so many people say that, well, I don't have this and what should I do? Yeah, don't worry about it. And you asked whether I can share an experience. It's interesting, when I had the experience I'm going to share now, I didn't think about enlightenment. And I wasn't looking for enlightenment. And only later, I understood that at that time, for the first time, I experienced something which other people might call an enlightenment experience. I was like everybody else. I don't know whether this is true, but I didn't feel cool. I felt pretty wrong. I was married a few times, and I thought, I have no clue how to do a relationship. It never works out. What's wrong with me? How can I do this better? And then I discovered some childhood drama, which were really very difficult at that time for me to process. And then I came across a therapist, a beautiful human being, an Osho sannyasin, and I had sessions with him. We didn't do like talk about problems. He did it totally different. He was like a spiritual master in his own right, but he didn't practice as such a master. He just did his therapy things, and he gave some workshops, but he was living his own enlightenment. I didn't notice at that time. I had no idea about all these things. So I was lucky enough to end up with an enlightened therapist, so to speak. And I had one session with him. He did some body work with me. And suddenly I was in a space where everything was gone. Everything was gone. But I was still there. It's hard to describe this. It was very quiet. It was not dramatic at all. It was like, you know, I had all these, I had these feelings inside of me, which I was scared of, and these memories I was scared of, and I was so afraid of things which were happening inside of me. And then there was this one point, and it made click, and it was, all the stuff was gone. It was totally quiet. All the agitation was gone. The whole world was gone. There was nothing anymore. But I was. I don't know what this I was. I could still perceive, but there was something which perceived. And it was totally undramatic. It felt so normal. So it's like, that's how things are. And then after a while, the session was over and I didn't think much about it. Of course, it influenced me. Of course, it was good for me to have this experience, but I didn't think much about it later when I heard in satsang how people looked for enlightenment. And then slowly I clued in and I understood that what I experienced then is what everybody looks for. Yeah, but it felt so normal for me that I didn't make a big fuss about it. I don't think that I ever told anybody about it at that time. Yeah. But also this, you know, it wasn't that this experience was key to my development. It was, there was a development going on. I slowly, slowly made peace with myself and all the things I had trouble with. And that, as a natural consequence, at some point, this could happen. Yeah, like that.
And what kind of body work was it that you had with a therapist? Can you remember what the name was?
Oh, he did a combination of all kinds of things. As I said, we talked, you know, we talked about things, but then he also sometimes gave me a cranio session. But this is not the important thing, you know. The important thing is for me, the important thing was his energy. You know, sometimes I talk about what is the role of a master or guru. We pick up the beingness of that other person. Something which is totally foreign to us. You know, another person has a kind of a way of being or a direction where his attention goes to, which is totally unknown to us. But when we come close to another person who is like this, suddenly we discover it for ourselves. And without that person, it would have been impossible for us. The other person doesn't do anything, but just by being close to each other in some way, doesn't have to be physical, we pick up this new energy, this new frequency, and suddenly we discover it in ourselves too. And I think this guy could also have made, you know, cooking lessons with me. Yeah? We could have cooked together. Yeah? Or built a building. But just by being with him, the doing is only an excuse. Things happen. Yeah. But we human beings, we need time and we need to fill this time with something so we can be together, and then it happens. Maybe the cranio was also good, but the important thing is this gift of the energy of the other person. And that's what I experienced with this man. Yeah. And that's why I want to stress this, because otherwise people start running after body workers because they want to get enlightened. You find an enlightened person, and then it doesn't matter what this person does, and it will help you. Yeah.
This enlightened person, should he or she be alive? My experience is, for example, at the moment I love to read books from Ramana Maharshi, and I feel resonance and something is happening with me. So it seems that the other human being doesn't has to be alive or has to be in the same room or something like this.
The other person certainly doesn't have to be in the same room. This is my experience. Yeah. And I share your experience that when you get in touch with a master or a guru who is not alive anymore, who is not in his body anymore, it can touch you in tremendous ways. For instance, I think it is 25 years ago that I read a book from Osho. Yeah? At that time, Osho was long dead, but it touched me very much. Yeah. Jesus, for instance, I grew up in a family which is totally unreligious. Nobody ever talked to me about anything related to Christianity or Jesus. But somehow when I heard about this Jesus, and it touched me even when I was a teenager. He's not alive, yeah? But we can feel him to this day. But usually it's like this, when you really let yourself be touched by somebody like Ramana Maharshi, when this is what's happening with you right now, usually what happens then is, without you noticing it, it happens hidden from you, Ramana Maharshi will bring you to a living guru or living master. That's what happened with me. I read this book from Osho. I really liked what I read. I was totally touched. And 2 years later, I was sitting in satsang with Soham. And I have no clue how I ended up there. Yeah. And I can answer your question only now because of what I heard from Swamiji, my Indian guru, who I met 6 years ago. I didn't know this before, so this is not my own wisdom I'm sharing right now. He said the living master is essential. Yeah, through a living master, you get what you really need. Yeah, it's incomparable to the master who is already dead, who already left his body. But usually, it's difficult or impossible for us to meet a living master, and this has two reasons. The one reason is that the living master, who we can see, yeah, these days you don't even have to go to India when you want to meet Swamiji. You can watch videos or live events online. But you experience this living human being, and you see his ordinariness, his humanness. It's like, you see that he is like anybody else. And it's very easy to overlook what's really unique about such a person. When you can't experience the master as a living being. Yeah, when you only have the message, only the book, then you don't experience the human aspect. You only experience the essence. You can feel it directly. If Ramana Maharshi would be alive right now, and you would be in his darshan, after a while you would see his humanness. You would see how he scratches himself, yeah, or how he eats and how he is like everybody else. And slowly, the same would happen like with the living gurus which are present right now. So Swamiji says the physical body of the guru or the master, the humanness, the ordinariness is a barrier. It's very difficult for us to look through that. And he said, as soon as the master dies, as soon as this barrier, this distraction is gone, then we can experience his divine energy directly, unfiltered. And then we are totally shocked. How could I miss this, we say. It happened many times to disciples of living gurus. And later they are like, oh my God, yeah, how could I not see this? Yeah, when he was in front of me. Yeah. And the second thing is, meeting a master who's not in his body anymore is safe. Yeah, you are in control. You read everything you like, and you let in whatever you let in. But when you meet a living master, you have no control. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, you will surrender. There is something in us humans, we call it ego, which likes to be in control, which likes to know everything. My ego thinks it knows how my life should be and how my path should be and what I should do tomorrow and what should be my goal, what's right, what's wrong. And when you meet a living master, there is no space for these things. When you really stay with the living master, these things become, they get attacked. And they don't like this. So it's normal for us human beings that we prefer the dead gurus. Jesus is so popular these days. You know, 2,000 years later, there's still millions and millions and millions of people who say that they are Christians. Same with Buddha. If Jesus would be here today, they would crucify him again. Nobody would listen to him. Would see his hair and his unholy clothing or whatever it is. We would not see him. Yeah. It's interesting. For me, this is a very interesting subject. You know, when I was a teenager, I said I was raised totally unreligious. Faith, religion didn't play any role in my life. But sometimes in school, in religious lessons or so, I heard about Jesus. And I prayed once, God, when Jesus comes again, please let me recognize him. And that's the key, you know. I don't know why I prayed this. I have no clue where this comes from. It must be of some past life or so. I'm not really expert in these esoteric things. But this is for me the biggest grace I have in my life, that I met a living master, Soham. And when I met him, I could recognize him. I was, although I was just having an ego like everybody else and being stupid like everybody else. By some grace, like my prayer got heard, I was able to recognize him. And I was able to stay with him, yeah, until today. Although all these things which don't want to get attacked, the ego, they get attacked again and again and again. And I stayed with him. This, for me, is pure grace. The same when Swamiji came, yeah, to see the amazing gift such a saint brings is that I can see this or feel it, yeah, for me is a miracle that I can feel this and be open for this, where it's so easy to not look at it. It's so easy. Yeah. And I heard people ask this question you just asked to Swamiji. They asked him too. And then he told the person who asked him this question, he said, "You are sitting here in front of me because you were, you know, years ago, you were worshipping this saint who is dead." Yeah, it was about Shirdi Sai Baba, I think. Yeah, there was a devotee of an Indian saint, a saint who is long dead. Yeah. But this Indian person, this person was worshipping this saint. And Swamiji said, "The saint, he sent me to you and to this living guru." Yeah. And this is what usually happens at some point. Yeah. That's my experience in my life. I don't know. I don't know anything about other people, but this is how I see these things.
You said you were surrounded by the energy of the therapist and the energy of your master. And during this time, did anything come up from the unconscious mind, and how did you deal with that?
This is a wonderful question. Because it gives me the opportunity to talk about time. Of course, things come up. I was very lucky. This enlightened therapist I was with, he was wise. And that means he didn't do anything. He didn't push anything. He didn't ask me questions to dig up unconscious things. He didn't believe that there's something in me which has to be brought to light and being healed or anything like this. No, he was and still is. He's still alive. He knew everything is fine. He gave me his peace. Yeah. And in his peace, he didn't have the urge to change me in any way. And he didn't think that I needed to be healed. I thought I need to be healed. Yeah, I thought I have a problem. But he knew that this is all not true. So it's not that there are unconscious things which are really problematic, but there are a lot of opinions we have about our feelings. Yeah. And when you are lucky as I was and as I am, you come to a person who knows, who sees your wholeness, yeah, and then things do come up. Things have to be welcomed and have to be made peace with. But with such a person, it happens by itself. And when things happen by themselves, they happen at the right time, very slowly, mostly almost like you don't even notice. Because they happen at the right time, when everything is ripe for it. Yeah. This is my experience. The therapist, he never pushed anything. He didn't have an agenda. Soham never pushes anything. He only sees your beauty. He doesn't see the problems you think you have. Yeah? So he doesn't push you. He doesn't try to dig up something or take away something from you or give you something which you need. So there's no pushing. He just invites you to be where you are, how you are right now. And everything which wants to come up will come up, but so slowly over the years, so gradually that it's no big deal. Yeah. Same with Swamiji. What people get into trouble with, especially in the spiritual field, is that they end up with people who are just as impatient and as everybody else, who think that the other people have a problem which needs to be solved, just like the people themselves think they have a problem. And then things get out of balance. Yeah. And then things get touched which are not ready to be touched. And then it gets, this is more difficult than it needs to be. I see this with the children here. When they go to a normal school, in a normal school, you have an agenda. Yeah. In first grade, you learn this. In second grade, you learn this and so on. But this, it doesn't mean that the child who sits in third grade is ready to learn these particular things, which should be learned right now. Some children, they start writing long before school. It's easy for them. But calculating numbers, they have no clue about this. And if you leave them alone, they learn this maybe when they're 11. And when we have a school like this, nearby where children learn when they're ready. And it's amazing what you watch. You know, once the child is ready for something, it happens in no time. In no time, they learn something, pick it up, it's easy, no pushing, no agony. And it's amazing how this happens. But in a normal school, the same child is being told, okay, now you have to learn how to calculate. This year you have to do it. And the child feels pressure. It's difficult. It has nothing to do with joy, nothing to do with playfulness. And the whole process becomes difficult and for some children a nightmare. Yeah. And the problem is not the learning. The problem is only the timing. Yeah. That we want the children to be productive faster. Yeah. We want to get them out of the house into the school so we can do our own thing. And society wants the children to become productive as quickly as possible. Yeah. And this with this mindset, we also approach spirituality and our inside world. Yeah. So if Swamiji says, the key to this whole thing is that it's slow. And that's what he's talking about. It all happens in its own time. If we let this entire spiritual process happen by itself, without any own agenda, without any hurry, without any getting out of my misery and getting into heaven quickly, so to speak, then whatever comes up will be fine. I want to share an experience of my own life. And that's how I ended up with this therapist in the first place. Yeah, that's why I went to him. How old was I? I must have been around 35 or 36. And I was a business guy. I felt important and cool. And I was sitting one, I was at that time, I had a job in Frankfurt where I got paid much more money than I was worth. And in my lunch break, I was sitting in a little Italian restaurant having a meal. And all of a sudden, I felt feelings I never felt before in my life. Very, very unpleasant feelings. Very unpleasant. Like from one moment to the next, I was in hell. It was very strong. It was an amazing experience. I remember to this day. But this came to me by itself. You know, no therapist was digging this up. I just had my normal life. I did as well as I could. And suddenly, these feelings for the very first time in my life knocked on my door. And with this experience, I didn't know what to do with this. I was pretty shocked and helpless with this. This led me to this enlightened therapist. And it was all no problem. He didn't do much. He was basically just giving me the space I needed to digest this experience. That was basically it. And his gift and his wisdom was to not touch me and my process, just to give me space and the time and just tell me everything is fine. This is perfect what happens. Yeah. And whatever you feel there, nothing special. Everything is fine. I know so many people who have the same thing. Don't worry. Stuff like that. Yeah. And then by his peaceful energy, by his knowing that this is all fine, I could just let it go its course. Yeah. And these feelings came to me the very first time when I was ready. Yeah. And so the whole thing was, I was going through this whole thing very, very quickly. It didn't take much time. And that's the problem when people are on a hurry on that path of healing or also on the spiritual path. When that's the trouble when they take drugs, for instance, yeah. In spiritual circles, sometimes it's very in to take certain drugs because you have fantastic experiences. But basically you open doors you're not ready for. And then people get into difficulties. Yeah. Yeah, but I was lucky. I was never in a hurry, and the people I met, they were never in a hurry either. So I was really lucky. Yeah.
Michael, could you talk about identification? Usually it happens to the people that they sense something or they think something or they feel something, and then automatically there is a habit to say, I feel this, I sense this, I think this. How is it inside you? Is there the identification with everything what's going on or with nothing? How can you describe it?
How can I describe this? It's interesting when this identification gets less or dissolves, you don't notice. Yeah. I have all kinds of feelings. And the best way I could describe it is I don't take them serious. Yeah. I could say I feel, you know, for me, the language is not the important part. Whether I say this, you know, I am scared or there is a feeling of fear in me, this doesn't make any difference to me. Yeah, this is just language. But do I take it serious? Yeah. does this do something with me? Or can I just let it be there? Oh, fear. Okay. Yeah, fear. I know you. Come. This, for me, this is the practical difference between how it used to be. Yeah. Being identified means you think it's important for you. You either think I need something, this is important for me, or you think I shouldn't have this feeling or this event in my life or whatever it is. And it's like, I know it's not important. How this happened, this knowing, it happened over time by two things. The one is, again, being around a master, being around a guru who knows what's really important, yeah, and that this is not important. And slowly, slowly you pick it up. But the other thing is, and this I find, you know, I like the practical. I like to look at these things very practically. You know, what helps me? Just practically speaking. And it's like, okay, if this is not important, how I feel, or if, you know, what else is important? Yeah. What should I take? Where should I put my attention to? If it's not to my feelings, yeah, what is it? If I'm not this body or this life or my thoughts, what am I then? Yeah. But not as an intellectual exercise. Yeah. It's easy to read a book and you read who you really are. Yeah. Somebody tells you, okay, you are a soul, or you are an angel, or you are energy, or whatever. But, and that this makes you feel good for 3 days, and then you feel like you always felt. I want to know what helps me practically to get out of this false identification with my feelings, with my body, with my life circumstances. Yeah. And for me, what really, it's interesting, you know, with the Soham, I learned to make peace with these things I was identified with. I learned to make peace with the feelings. I made peace with the moment, how life is. I made peace with the stupid people around me. Yeah. Everybody's always stupid. Only I am the only normal person. Yeah. And I made peace with all this, but I still didn't know. Okay, if this is all not important, what is important, why am I here, what is it, yeah, but not mentally, yeah, I want to know it hands on. And this only came into my life with Swamiji. This, it's like Soham brought me to the door. Without Soham, I would not have been able to see Swamiji, the Indian guru I'm with now. Soham brought me to the, made me ready. He taught me the peace with everything. And then Swamiji showed me what really is important in a way that I could experience it. This is the Samapan meditation. Yeah. The important thing here is not this guru, Swamiji. He brings this meditation, a very simple thing. And I started this. And as simple as it is, slowly, slowly over the month, over the years, I began to discover, wow, there is something. How can I describe this? A permanent, eternal source of being. That's the only thing which matters. If I identify with this, if I give this importance, if I give my attention to this, it's like you get a totally new experience of your life and all of the things you were identified with up to this point. So for me, it's really very practical. If somebody tells me, okay, this is not it, I need to know and experience, okay, what is it then? Yeah. And this is the gift Swamiji brought into my life with this tool of the Samapan meditation. I don't know whether I answered your question now, Devaseto. I think I got a little sidetracked.
Yeah, no, for me it's answered.
Thank you. Good, yes, I'm happy.
Thank you. So now you'd like to talk more about the Samapan meditation, how it works practically and what it affects, or does it affect anything, things like this?
Well, practically, it's totally, technically speaking, it's totally simple. But I want to say that if whoever wants to start this meditation should do an official introduction. Swamiji brings this meditation into our lives, and there are people in Germany and in basically every other country in the world who are in touch with Swamiji and who do introductions. And it's totally simple. It's a very unspiritual event. It's nothing special. You can do it online. But they explain to you a few things which are important. And they tell you a few things I usually always forget when I talk about it. And somehow it's helpful to do it this way, because you get a taste of it, which I think I can give you. So this as a side note. What this meditation does, I mean, practically, you sit down first thing in the morning, and all you do is that you give your attention to this spot here. The Indians call it the crown chakra. It's a very esoteric word, but basically it's just this highest spot on your head. And you don't have to know anything about it. You don't have to know the background. You don't have to become spiritual to do this. But then you give your attention to this one spot and you don't do anything else. This is not a mental exercise. You don't do affirmations or visualizations. You don't think about anything. The only thing you try to do is focus your attention on this one spot. It sounds totally simple. And actually it is technically, but you will discover that it's impossible because you are not master of your attention. Your attention does whatever it wants. Yeah, you sit down and you close your eyes, and as soon as you don't do anything and you try to focus your attention on this one spot, 10 seconds later, you will start thinking about your job or about something which you think is important or nice or terrible. And then you go back with your attention there. And you do this again and again and again for half an hour, first thing in the morning. Practically speaking, that's it. It sounds totally unspecial. And the effects are dramatic. Yeah. As I said before, everything good in life happens slowly and naturally in its own time. And the same is true, of course, with the Samapan meditation. You do it every morning. And what then happens is Swamiji explains it this way. He says, you are not the body. You are not your thoughts. You are not your wishes and all this stuff. In reality, you are a soul, but we don't know what this is supposed to be, a soul. We don't have any, we can't feel it. We can't, we can think about it. We can imagine it, but this is not helpful. But when you do this meditation, when you become familiar with this spot here, for me, it is like slowly, slowly, all the things I took so serious before, you, Devasito, you were talking about the identifications. All these things I took so important and so serious, they become less important. And I discover something new I've never known before. And it's basically impossible to talk about what you discover there because one has to experience it. But this is what Swamiji calls the soul. This is what Jesus was talking about when he talked about the Holy Spirit. That's what makes us alive. That's what we really are. Yeah. It's very difficult to talk about this without sounding really esoteric. But that's the basic effect of this meditation. And if you hear about this for the first time, you think, okay, this sounds good, but it's nothing special. I do this meditation now since 5.5 years. It's almost 6 years now. And with, as time goes by, I slowly, slowly discover how amazing this really works. It's really amazing. I just a few days ago, I saw an old video you did with Benita Devasito, where Benita, who is Swamiji's, how do you say, she lives in Germany, and she works for Swamiji here in Germany. And she said in this interview with you that this meditation is like a workshop. Yeah. You don't know anything about the program. You just meditate every morning. But over time, over the month and the years, you are taking through all kinds of phases, all kinds of developments happen. You don't know anything about it. You just noticed how your experience in meditation is different every time, how there are times where it's easy, how there's times where it's difficult, times where it's pleasant, times where it's unpleasant. But it's an ongoing process, and we don't know the program. We just meditate. And I like this. I like this description. This is my experience. And slowly, slowly, I discovered that this is a totally amazing, magical thing, which looks so ordinary. It's like you think it's a piece of glass on the ground, but it's a diamond. Yeah. We focus on this spot here on the crown chakra. And for me, I call this the door to heaven. That's why this is how the introduction to all of my videos got created, because this is my experience that when we rest with our attention at that spot, not only during the meditation, but also all the time, if you remember, it really feels like you sit at the door to heaven. And one of the magic things for me is, you know, the big difficulty in life is this. You are either totally identified with this earthly stuff, what you mentioned before, and then you start discovering that there's something else, and then you get identified with that. Yeah, people get into all kinds of mental fantasies about spirituality. And this is not helpful. This is just as unhelpful as being identified with other thoughts or with the body. It's like Osho said, you know, roots and wings, yeah? Zorba the Buddha. You need to be grounded and spiritual at the same time, yeah? Grounded and heavened, so to speak. And this spot here, for me, it is like this. When I rest my attention exactly at this spot here, I'm connected with my body, and at the same time, I'm connected with something beyond, something I don't know anything about, but which is tangible. But I don't lose the ground. I don't, in German we say abheben. Yeah? I don't fly away. The thing is, when we meditate, we don't know, am I in a fantasy? Some people have great experiences and they see things and God know what. Are they in a fantasy? Are they just mind fucking? Yeah. What's going on? And as I said, I like it very, very practical. I need it very practically. I don't trust anything which is going on in my head. Yeah. I can't judge whether what I experience is a nice dream where I delude myself or whether it's real. But when I just come always back to this one spot, this physical spot here. And then I feel the earth, I feel the body. And at the same time, I feel heaven. Yeah. And it's interesting. Sometimes it feels, I feel like this. It's like I lose this connection to the earth a little bit. And then I come back. I pull myself back down, so to speak. Sometimes I feel like I get lost in the body. Some thoughts, some dreams. And then I pull myself up again here. Always at this boundary between earth and heaven. And when I do this again and again and again, then it's like my experience of meditation becomes more and more like as if I am in heaven, but I'm here. Yeah. I don't go anywhere. The goal is not to go somewhere. The goal is to be just here. Nothing else. Everything else happens by itself. And this is a magical aspect of this meditation I just recently got aware of, that it really is this sweet spot. Yeah. The sweet spot just between heaven and earth. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, thank you. In the beginning, we were talking about the role of a spiritual teacher. You see yourself now in the role of a spiritual teacher? I mean, people ask you questions and you answer by video. Maybe you also give coachings, I don't know. So how do you see yourself now?
I share my experiences. I'm a disciple. Yeah. I'm a student. And as such, I share my experiences. I can say that I'm a student because I'm open to learn. I was and I am. And I share what I experienced in the past and I share what I experience now and what works for me and what didn't work for me so well. This is what I want to share. And if it's helpful for some people, then I'm very, very happy. I could never call myself a spiritual master or anything like this because for me, nobody can say this about him or herself. You know, this, maybe you are a spiritual master for somebody else. Yeah. This is in the eyes of the beholder, so to speak. About myself, I can only say that I'm a disciple. Yeah. And I want to share, you know, we live in a world where, in a way, we live in a world where the ego is stronger than ever before. It's like, it's so in, it's so en vogue to know what you want, to be clear about your life path, to take charge of your life, also in spirituality, to, you know, the last thing we want to do is give up control. The last thing we find cool or desirable is to give ourselves away to somebody else. It's unthinkable, you know, It's just, I mean, if you say this to your friends, they will think you're crazy. You know? And what I want to do is I want to share what happens if you're crazy and stupid enough to let this happen. Because I'm a normal person. I had a normal business life. I was married a few times and failed again and again. I had all kinds of jobs which I loved, but eventually they went away. There was never anything special about me. The only special thing in my life does not come from my wisdom. I don't know where it comes from. I was able to allow myself to be surrendered. Yeah. And I want to talk about what happens then. And I can be the one voice in the life of other people who says, yeah, you can, if you feel like this, if something like this happens in your life, I can only recommend it. Yeah. Because usually people hear the opposite from everybody else. And if at some point in 10 years, some people call me a master, I don't know, but I don't care. And I can say this, you know. So I'm a student. I started my YouTube channels a few weeks ago, and then you have to make this channel description, and you need to say who you are. And I thought about exactly this question, you know, how do I describe myself? And that's what's written there, yeah. I am a spiritual disciple.
But practical, what you are offering to other people?
My experience. I share my experiences. I share what happened in my life. Yeah? And I tell people to tell me their questions. Yeah, because it inspires me to talk about these things. Yeah. Because we all have the same issues. So far, I've never heard a question written to me which didn't resonate with me, where I didn't have any own experience with. And then I can talk about how I experienced this and how I see this. Just to give these people my perspective. What they make out of this, I don't know. Yeah. But that's what I do. I say, okay, this is how it can work. Yeah. Maybe you are interested in trying this out too. Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
And if somebody asks, for example, for a private Zoom session, to talk to you, would you say, yes, that's possible?
I don't like this idea because this is not what it is about. Yeah. It's not about somebody telling me their problem and I give them the solution. It doesn't work like this. Yeah. I know there are many people out there who does exactly this. Maybe it works for them. I don't know. I can't do this because what I know works, that is something else. I display myself and I make these videos because this is something you can talk about. I shared earlier, we pick something up from somebody else, from another human being, by being in his energy. When somebody watches my videos or listen to my voice, then something happens which I can control and which I don't do. They rest in my energy. And I can control my energy. My energy is the way it is. Yeah. And then something gets transferred, but it has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. It has nothing to do with my words. Yeah. And it's a process which happens mysteriously and over time. Yeah. And when I would offer private sessions and probably charge a lot of money for it, then people would have expectations that I will solve their problem or they could get something from me. Yeah. Something which they otherwise couldn't get. And this is just not true. Yeah. It's not true. Somebody like Swamiji, he doesn't give private sessions. This is not how it works, you know. All you need to do is feel this openness inside of yourself for this other person. And then everything this other person has to offer comes to you. You don't have to have a private session. You don't have to pay money for it. There's a beautiful story which Swamiji shared in one retreat, in one video shibir. He talked about this. He talked about this young farmer's boy, and there was this archery master. Yeah, it's probably a Zen story. I don't know. There was this archery master. He was famous in the entire country for his archery skills. And he had disciples, and he taught them archery. So this young boy, he was a farmer's boy, and he fell totally in love with this master. And he went to him and he said, please accept me as your disciple. I want to learn this from you. And this master said, I can teach you. Yeah. This master was of a higher caste, of a higher, level in society, and it was impossible that he would accept a disciple like this from who was a farmer or from some low caste. So the master sent him away. He just sent him away. And what this young man did was he took clay and he made a statue of the master out of clay. And he loved the statue. He surrendered to the statue. And he told the statue, now you teach me archery. And it happened. Yeah. And what this story Swamiji told there symbolizes is it's your openness. It's your feeling towards that person or towards that energy, whatever you feel. That's all which is needed. And then it will come to you slowly, slowly over time. And the story is beautiful. It ends then that this young man, he became such a good archer. There was one contest where they all met in the country to find out who's the best archer. And this boy did some amazing thing. I don't want to go into the details, although they are really beautiful. He became the best. But not because he was as close to the master as possible. Yeah. And Swamiji says, you don't have to come to me to India. He says, it's not about physical presence. Yeah. And I can feel it too. I feel if I would allow somebody to meet me privately, I would just give food to an imagination, yeah, to this idea that this is needed or that this is helpful. It's not needed, and I don't think it's helpful. It's better to give it time and to watch the videos or whatever. Yeah.
Svante, do you have another question or questions?
Yes, I do. Michael, when you talked about everything has its right spot and everything has its time, it sounds very trustful. So could you say your life, that you are more trustful than you have been before?
I mean, I certainly worry much less than before. I don't think I worry anymore. I think this stopped at some point. But when you ask me and I look back at my life, that is one thing I had in my life, and I have no clue why, I have no clue where it came from. I had a certain, even when I was very young, I had this some fundament inside of me where I always knew it's okay, it's right. And it was so normal for me, even when I was a teenager or a child, that I didn't even notice. But I remember I must have been 10 years old or so. I remember one moment I was on my way to school. I was walking down to the bus station. And I remember how I was thinking, strange. Why do all these people worry about all these things? I didn't understand because I didn't worry. But I don't know where this came from. I have no clue. It certainly did not come from my parents. I don't know. I brought it with me. I don't know. Yeah. So there was a basic trust in me. But I was able to worry from time to time in certain situations in my life. But basically, I was, most of my life, I was very worry free, very. I somehow I knew it's the right thing, even when I was really in a difficult situation. I remember one moment, I must have been 12. And I was always a very afraid boy. I was not strong. I was not in my body. I was weak. And all the other boys in school, they were rough and they were beating each other up. And I was just terrified of all these boys and I couldn't defend myself. And I was one moment, I was walking along the street in an area of town where there was not many people around. And I was walking on the sidewalk and there were four boys approaching me and they were still quite a ways away, but I knew this is trouble. I just felt it. I knew this is trouble. I didn't know the boys. You know, they must have been 100 or 150 meters away, but I knew, uh-oh. And I was 11 or 12. I was totally helpless. But I knew if I turn around, they would just go after me. But there was something in me. I just walked into this situation. You know, I probably could have walked away or just ran away and find some people. But I just continued on my way. It sounds totally crazy, yeah. There was some trust in me, something like, everything will be fine. These four boys stopped me. They stopped me. They wanted to mess with me. They wanted to start a fight. Yeah. They were really rough. And I don't know how it happened. I started talking to them. And at the end, they let me go. I just talked to them. I said the right words. Something happened. I can't explain what it was. And then suddenly the situation was over. And I was really scared. It felt like, okay, this is dangerous. Yeah. And this trust, I don't know where this comes from. I don't know whether this is something every person has inside. I don't know, but I had, yeah. But later on in my life, I learned, yes, what you feel is how life operates. Yeah. As I said before, the last thing we learn these days is to surrender, to accept. We want to be in charge. Yeah, this is more than ever before. This is what people think they should achieve. But I met my master, I met my guru, and they basically told me, yes, what you felt all of your life, this is the truth. This is how life works. Yeah. You can trust this. You can depend on this. Yeah. I don't know whether my answer makes sense.
So you think trust is something that everybody has inside and sometimes it's covered up by some issues. And then we just have to re-find that we are already in trust, right?
I mean, what I hear from people is how they not trust, yeah? How they believe something is wrong, how they believe something is difficult. I think basically all of us have this somewhere inside of us. And that's why I make these videos. Yeah. Then they hear somebody say, or say things like I do. And what happens then is they sense something inside of them, something like, oh yeah, actually, I felt this also once or twice. Actually, I also had an experience like this, you know? But usually we don't believe this, because what we see with other people, what gets communicated, what gets passed on, is the opposite. What we share is our fears, our worries, our agony, our distrust. That's what gets shared all over, yeah? Our criticism, our negativity, that's what's getting shared in the movies, in the dramas, in the media, in the newspapers, and amongst friends, and amongst parents and children. That's what we share. Yeah. But I think all of us have this inside. Yeah. Otherwise, it would not be possible that you come to a master or to a disciple like I am, and you hear something, and you close your eyes, and you know what this guy says is true. You just know. And you only know because somewhere inside of you, you have the same thing. Maybe you never heard any encouragement like this before in your life. But as soon as you hear it, you know it's true. And then, of course, you forget it again. And when we start giving this attention, then it's like for a short time, we look at our life from a different perspective. And suddenly we see the same things in our past and we notice, this is what happened back then. Yeah. And slowly we discover that our life has actually the same working like what I share about my life. But you just overlooked it. You just didn't notice it, yeah? Because the whole world tells you the opposite. Yeah. I think it is like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Do you have any other questions, Wolfram?
No. Maybe Michael, you want to ask a question that we did answer a question that we didn't have asked.
Well, I would like to talk about one more thing, if you allow. You know, if Svante, you just asked about this trust, yeah, and whether I believe that everybody has this inside of him or herself and it just needs to be uncovered. I once had a conversation with Soham where I talked with him about, I told him about my amazement, how amazing I find it, how this resonance is possible between me and him. Yeah. Actually, it was a conversation not only with me, there was also Rajma in this conversation, who was his caretaker at that time. And I said, how is this possible? How is this possible that without many words, almost without words, we understand each other? Why are we able to be in this way together over so many years? How is this possible? And Soham said, and this is, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or 12, and he said something amazing to me. He said, you know, we know each other. We have been together so many lives. And I'm a totally unesoteric person. I don't know anything about all these things. But when he said this, I knew it's true. I knew that we live on a fundament which is not from this life. Yeah. And Swamiji says the same thing. He says, whoever comes in touch with him in this life, it's only because we know him since many, many, many lives. He says there are many souls who wait for him to bring liberation since quite a few lives. And he said he promised so many souls to liberate them once he discovered the secret, and now he discovered it, and now he brings it. So this is a perspective which spans many lifetimes. And this is something which is not part of my experience. I don't know anything about these things. But when I hear it, it makes sense. Yeah, it's when you in this life end up watching a strange YouTube channel called Jetzt TV or Here Now TV. Yeah, this is only possible because you had quite a few lives before where you were doing all kinds of graceful things preparing you for this, because other people can't hear this. Yeah. Normal people hear these things and they think, yeah, these guys are totally, you know, they're totally off the ground. They're crazy. Yeah. But for you, it's like, oh wow, there is something. Yeah. You are ripe for this. And this everybody, I think everybody who hears this, who comes together here, they have this fundament. And they probably don't know it. I don't know it in my life. I can't see my past lives or anything like this. But when Soham or Swamiji talk about this, then I know it's true. Yeah. And it explains where these things come from in our life. Although we can't explain where it should come from this life. Not from our parents, not from our school or anything like that. Yeah, that's what I wanted to add at the end.
Okay, then thank you very much, Michael.
Oh, thank you, Devaseto. Thank you, Svante. Thank you for this interview.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you very much.